there are some steps we could take, not to eliminate every one of these mass shootings, but to improve the odds that they don't happen as frequently. Common sense gun safety laws, stronger background checks.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
San Bernardino, an inexplicable murder of 14, 17 injured. 10 of those, as of 4 o'clock this morning, were still on the critical list and hanging on for life. It's a terrible story. It's another terrible story. It's another hideous shooting. This one in particular, if you want to go by body count, is the second worst in Newtown. And, of course, when we change nothing after Newtown, a lot of people lost hope. Losing hope is probably understandable, but losing hope doesn't change anything. So what do we do now? You know, the president also addressed yesterday this idea that you can be on a no-fly list, but you can buy a gun. That's legislation that, I mean, you do a quick Google hit on that, you'll see stories going back to 2007 that it was a non-starter in Congress. I mean, the cowards in Congress just never fail to amaze me. But when are you listening to the show right now, when are you going to be sick of this? Sick of this enough to do something about it. I know you said, Steve, what do I do? Well, you contact the people that want your vote. You contact the people that already have your vote. You tell them you're done supporting them. You get your neighbors to do the same thing. It's just unbelievably aggravating. It's 6:42. Chuck Todd, we love Chuck, and Chuck, of course, hosts Meet the Press, 9,000 other things on NBC. I'm surprised he wasn't doing the Thanksgiving Day parade. Did they probably asked you, right? They asked you to get ready in case Lauer went down?
It's always the backup for Matt.
there you go. Nice to talk to you. I suppose you probably have more questions of us than we do of you, considering how calm things are here in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, I am wondering, is Rahm going to survive us?
You know?
And what's the definition of survive? He may survive, but he may not be able to get anything done as mayor for a while or for the rest of this term. I mean, this is in a tough position.
Yeah, and it's a perfect storm of stupid, because at a time when the city is broke, the state doesn't have a budget, you don't need a major political scandal thrown in the middle of it.
No, and that's, there are a million ways this is poorly handled. And I guess he knows it. I'll be curious to see if he can get past this to the point where he can get anything else done.
Does he have political capital in Washington anymore?
I don't think so. I mean, and not to say that, but that's simply because he's not been here. I mean, as a mayor, I don't think so. There's a lot of respect for him here, but I don't know how much capital he actually has.
So financially, he's fine for the rest of his life. He can go do whatever he wants. And by the way, the mm-hmm. police superintendent is going to have a great career. He's going to go on and do things. The state's attorney, who may lead to her stepping down as well. I mean, all these people are going to be fine. The question is, are you going to be fine? Is the city going to be fine? That's the question that needs to be answered. Moving on to California, it happened again, and mm-hmm. it happened at a worse level. I don't know how you score these things, but this is hideous. Do we know anything new?
Not a lot new, other than it appears to be a couple, whether it's husband and wife or boyfriend and girlfriend. There's that. I think we're up to, this is the sixth worst in American history, by the way, for a mass shooting at 14. So it's the sad thing about this, in so many ways. I mean, there's so many sad things about it. It's routine.
Yeah, it's exactly
right.
We
have a routine in our news division. There is a way, and that's the part of this that it's very frustrating to cover as a journalist. You're sitting there going, how does a tragedy like this become routine? We're going, oh, all right, we're in our breaking news coverage. Okay, Pete Williams, you got to do this. And if the viewers feel beat down, if people, everybody does, trust me.
You know, one of the London tabloids in this morning, their edition, wrote the headline that sums it up, just another day in America.
Yeah, it was a pretty rough one. Look, the political divide on the gun issue, or the right to gun, is something that's just, You know, I can just tell you politically, nothing's going to happen. And I heard you before. If it's going to have to, you know, until this issue becomes a voting decisive issue, voting wise. Well, actually, it is, but it is a decisive issue voting wise if you vote to restrict rights to guns. Right now, it is still more. You're more likely to get punished at the polls if you vote to restrict rights to guns than if you vote to vote for more restrictions.
If we quantify that, though, isn't that because those who believe their gun rights are threatened are more likely to vote than those who are against
that's
it?
That's exactly right. No, that's exactly right. You know, remember during Newtown, the president used this talking point about, well, 90% are for these background checks.
You got to vote.
But the intensity of the folks that are against it, they're the ones that show up and vote. They're the ones that show up at town halls. They're the ones that, you know, they're much more active. It's much more important to them. They spend a lot more political capital than it is for folks that want to see these restrictions.
The disconnect that amazes me too, Chuck Todd, is that you've got a Congress that can barely agree to walk across the street. Now, I say this on because the light's green, but I say this on a day when the transportation bill was done. There was another significant piece of legislation that was passed. So there's these quiet leaps now that are going on, which are all good things, and they need to be lauded when good things happen because they're rare.
Right.
But having said that, this Congress can't agree on anything. So the notion that there would be an agreement to try to overturn the Second Amendment and that legal gun rights would be taken away, it's just ludicrous. I don't know. Understand the disconnect.
Well, here's what, if we just began this way, my job as a journalist, I'm sitting there, I'm going to cover what we see. But if we have a mass shooting that's taken place more than once a month,
right?
At a minimum, shouldn't Congress be investigating?
Right.
Shouldn't Congress be conducting some hearings, going, "Hey, you know, is there some ways we can do this? What are the different, you know? Do a study, do something." This is, I have a middle schooler who's constantly now, unfortunately, watching too much news. It is at a minimum, go look like you want to try to do something about this. Let's have a sober debate. Maybe we'll prove in some sort of congressional hearing that gun control restrictions won't work, but make the case then. Do something. Conduct a hearing. Show, rather than just saying, okay, we want to offer our thoughts and prayers and move on. You know, let's at least attempt to see what would it take to, you know, if it's a mental health thing, then fine, let's go to the med. Whatever it is.
Right.
Let's just have a hearing and let's do some fact finding. That's all. And we're not even doing fact finding anymore on these things.
No, and yesterday on the Hill, within an hour of when these shootings broke in the news, there was testimony on the Hill about, and doctors practically begging Congress to fund gun violence studies. So you could get some information to push things forward. And, most of the people on the panel look like they were, you know, at the orthodontist waiting for the call to go back and get their teeth fixed. I mean, it's the last place they wanted to be.
Because if they vote even for that, the NRA will make it an issue that they raid on and then they send out in a mailer. And so there is fear. It is all fear of retribution from the NRA to even tiptoe in this direction of doing what doctors are asking for, right? Which is just simply a study, right?
Yeah, and that's it.
A fact, you know, this is just fact finding. Like, you know, everybody has set this aside. It's like, this isn't about taking away your guns. It's about, we're just going to do fact finding. Just fact finding. Let's see. Let's explore all the different avenues. Some people think it'll take more restrictions. Some people think it's mental health. Let's look at all of it. And let's have a real fact finding expedition on Congress, but they don't even want to do that because immediately the fear of political retribution.
And I'll say this from the perspective of someone who grew up as hunting, grew up around guns, believes in legal gun ownership, and believes in the Second Amendment. The irony of all of this, Chuck, is the longer we wait on this and the more of these they're not tragedies. Tragedies sound like accidents. This is a travesty. The more these travesties continue to happen, The irony is there's going to be excessive gun restrictions put into place as we stand them today, because they're going to be forced down the throats of the people that are trying to prevent even the minor moves.
That's a good point, because at some point they'll become a, you know, it becomes a point you do nothing, and then you do too much.
Right.
Right. They'll become an overreaction. You would think that the NRA would want to be on the side of, hey, I want to show that we want to do something too, because we only want legal gun ownership.
Totally
we only
agree.
Want responsible gun owners. This is one of those, you take control of the situation yourself and say, this is what we want. But you know what? Yeah, 20 plus first graders were killed.
Yeah,
2 years ago,
and we did nothing.
So that's right.
What do you do?
It was a social services building,
right?
You know, the people that were killed in here, they work with families who have autistic kids. Maybe they can't afford. Maybe they're petrified of how much it costs to have to deal with that. That's what goes on in a building like that.
Yeah, special needs kids and kids with that need help. Their slogan, their mission was beautiful the way it was stated. They basically take people who struggle at a different level and just try to help them maximize their lives. And they were mowed down at their Christmas party by two lunatics. When's it going to be enough? Look, I know you got to talk about this Sunday. You have any idea what else is happening yet on Meet the Press?
Well, we'll be doing that. We'll obviously dip in some form of what's going on the Republican side and the sudden panic about Trump. I say sudden, you know, there's been a panic about Trump for months, but now, you know, the rubber's hitting the road.
Right.
So between that, this story and ISIS, I need 90 minutes every week now.
You need 90? Dude, you need the whole day. I'll take you right up until kickoff for football.
You know what? That would be perfect. I'd love to do that. I may even make the last 15 minutes pregame.
So that's exactly right. You're a fan. You get it. It's Chuck Todd, by the way, at Chuck Todd, all over social media, Meet the Press. Thank you, my friend.
You got it. Thank
you. See you. I mean, you can hear the frustration in his voice. And keep in mind, we're here dealing with the Chicago mess. We know what happened in California yesterday. He's at the epicenter. He's in Washington.
You know, listening to him.
Did you hear the frustration?
I was just going to say, I think so many people are frustrated and saying, you know what, here's another one, because there really is nothing that we as people can do. Yeah, we can go and vote.
Well, there is stuff we can do, but there's nothing people believe can be done.
Yeah, but if we say you vote everybody out and you get a whole new batch of lawmakers, okay, then it takes how many years to put in new laws?
I don't know, but if you don't do nothing,
fix the loopholes.
If you don't do anything, nothing changes. Minor steps, baby steps. Just do something, you cowards. It's 6:54, and the cowards I'm speaking of are the elected officials. It's 6:54. Traffic. Mary, what's up? Pat Brady's here. Pat, what company do you work with?
Next Generation Strategies.
And how would we connect with you? How would we follow you?
Pat_Brady.
All right. I would also encourage people to listen to the entire hour, because at the end, I give out your personal cell phone and your address if you'd like to follow you, literally.
Didn't Rahm say that yesterday?
Yeah.
Or was that Donald Trump?
He's very upset. Rahm's very upset. Eric, who are you with?
I am with AL Media.
AL Media. And what do you do over there? Mostly Amway, selling cleaning products. What are you doing?
We do public affairs and electoral campaigns around the country.
Well, that's different.
Different than what?
What I said.
Oh, a little bit.
Yeah.
Although we're not averse to selling Tupperware.
Whatever you need.
That's right.
Whatever you need. And Rick Pearson is America's finest political writer, and also he hosts the Sunday Spin. Who are your guests this weekend? Oh, I thought he was
going late.
Let's take that from the top. Let's take that from the top. Who are your guests this weekend?
I've got a couple of folks from the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs talking about the current economic conditions in the state of Illinois.
That's Sunday morning at 7 a.m. All right, let's start with yesterday. Apparently, Rahm and the family are headed for Cuba. That seems drastic. I mean, I think you should stay around. I don't think political prisoner escaping kind of thing might be ahead of the curve here.
Well, he always does a holiday trip, and yes, during a breakfast conference hosted by Politico, what upset him was the fact that he does not talk family in public, really doesn't like to do that, had relayed to Mike Allen, Politico's chief Washington correspondent, that he was taking the family to Cuba Mike Young brought this up in public. The mayor got offended that what he thought was a private conversation became public, even though it wasn't necessarily off the record. But, you know, he has canceled. He was supposed to be basically in Paris today for the International Climate Change Conference, and he canceled that because of, obviously, the turmoil that's over here at home. But, you know, it was an example of how Emmanuel tries to have it both ways with the media. He likes to schmooze the national media and still a national media figure. But at the same time that he tries to schmooze, you know, he isn't shy about stating his displeasure with the media.
I asked Chuck Todd this morning if he had any political capital left in Washington, and Chuck said, no, he's not here and he doesn't. Everybody knows him. Well, but he's got nothing he could call on here to help leverage his problems in Chicago.
Well, in fact, you had some very prominent members of the Congressional Black Caucus yesterday saying that, a number of them thought he should resign. Also, two, they support the call for the Justice Department to do a complete investigation of the practices of the Chicago Police Department. That's something that the mayor says he's opposed to. It's something that Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan has asked Loretta Lynch, the U.S. Attorney General, to do. I think he's still a quote national figure, but as far as influence in the nation's capital, there isn't a whole lot.
So you get rid of, if you're Rahm Emanuel, you get rid of the police superintendent. There's pressure on Anita Alvarez to step aside, but the big three in this story include him. What changed after Gary McCarthy was fired the other day in Rahm's eyes that he thinks makes his world better here?
Well, and Steve, that's a really good question, because he said he says he's loyal to Gary McCarthy and loyal to what McCarthy has done at the at CPD. He said that McCarthy had become a distraction. He'd become an issue. Well, if you take it the next step, that's really what the mayor of Chicago has become.
Yep.
He's an issue. He's a distraction. And you have more than just a crisis of confidence in necessarily the police department. I think there's a crisis of confidence in Chicago city government.
So the Anita Alvarez piece of this story is that she was meticulous. She wanted to make sure that she had covered all the angles. She also apparently wanted to set some type of world record for the longest time it ever took to process an indictment. So what is her next move, or is she hoping this all sort of drifts away?
Well, there's no doubt that the Alvarez camp wants some time, that they believe that when the dust settles, that they can fully explain that, one, they asked for federal involvement as part of the investigation, and two, that having asked for that federal involvement, the fact that the feds interviewed, you know, about 100 witnesses, grand jury proceedings, that all took time. And, you know, that whether people will accept that, that's they're playing defense. And going into a reelection campaign, her bid in the March primary, whether people accept that, that's the real test here.
Has Chuy Garcia got any pull here to create even more problems for Rahm? I mean, obviously his claim is if this video came out in time, then maybe the $5 million payment made a couple of weeks later doesn't happen. And maybe he's the mayor, because the mayor then has outraged the African-American community. He doesn't get the black vote, and he loses to Chuy Garcia. Is Chuy Garcia going to make more of an issue out of this, and can he?
Well, he has really not stopped running, even though, you know, he lost in April to Emmanuel following the runoff. But I think this is still a kind of a continuous thread of Garcia's, is to keep his profile high and try to look for what's ahead in the future for another run. Can you say that Rahm Emanuel would have lost the election if the video had come out? I don't know that you can go that far. And as we've said so many times, when you look at election campaigns, sometimes there are external forces that no politician can control. Every politician running for election wants to control the narrative. Sometimes you can't control that. This would have been a very interesting narrative if we had known the details, if we had seen the video then. But who knows how that would have ultimately affected the dynamics of the campaign in the minds of voters.
We're going to take this up with Pat and Eric here in a little bit, the odd little sit-down without turkey that went on in Springfield a day ago. I don't know if they're all winded. It's the first budget meeting they've had in a while. But is there any other news that's come out of that we ought to be aware of?
No, I mean, it was the first budget meeting, frankly, the first time that the governor and what's known as four tops, the four legislative leaders, it's the first time they all sat together as a group since the end of May.
Well, yeah, I mean, why rush?
Right, exactly. And you know it's not necessarily a good sign when your people are asked about, well, what progress did you make? And the main progress was the fact that they met. You know, that given beyond that, you look at what their public statements were coming out of the meeting, that kind of thing. They're using the same talking points they used back in May. So what's changed? Not substantially a lot. The House did pass a bill yesterday. It still needs action by the Senate, which is coming back on Monday, that will pay the lottery winners. It will give the motor fuel tax money to local communities. They were looking at the prospect of not having money to be able to buy road salt and things like that for the winter. It'll pay some social services, but still, we're still just kind of, even as the governor said yesterday, we're kind of in a treading water mode right now.
More coming up from Rick Pearson at ChicagoTribune.com over the next couple of days, and of course Sunday morning on the Sunday Spin. Thank you for the update on all of it, buddy.
Thank you, Steve.
Talk to you later. That's Rick Pearson at RAP30, RAP30. Eric and Pat are here. Eric Adelstein, Pat Brady. Any sort of political reaction to what's happened in San Bernardino so far, or is it too early?
You know, it's too early, and I heard your conversation with Chuck, and I don't want to make politics out of it, but I do think your points about the NRA, and it's not just Republicans. I mean, Democrats have been captive of that group, and I think what's sad to me is, you look, there's always crazy people, and there have been throughout our history.
Sure.
The difference is the firepower. And, you know, there's a difference between a crazy person walking onto a train station and shooting President Garfield,
right,
with a gun that shoots once or twice, and an AR-15 that has, you know, 30 rounds in a clip and can fire 700 bullets in a minute. That's
right.
Why we have mass shootings. And what troubles me about the NRA position is I don't think it's principled. I think they hide behind principle because they're funded by the gun companies. They're funded by these manufacturers. And they, as you said, they have this very hardline position that even, I mean, look, every Republican took a procedural vote the other day, even some who were on this bill to keep terrorists, give background checks to terrorists from getting guns. Every Republican was so afraid of the NRA that they voted this procedure vote, not to even have a debate on this bill. So
is there an easy precedent or an easy pullback you guys can go to that's similar to this, where there is clearly, and I'm talking about the membership of the NRA, fully support some of these common sense changes? When the membership and the people of this country say we want to do something, but the greater fear is the NRA, I mean, I can't immediately pull something that I can go, well, yeah, but that also happened here.
Yeah, for better or worse, the NRA is the most effective lobby and advocacy group in the United States. And
I don't know what the better is, man.
They are. I agree. I mean,
I think they're.
I agree with your point. If we don't do something, some kind of compromise, we're going to get ridiculous laws because babies being shot like in Newtown. And their kids being shot in their classroom, that's just unacceptable to most people. And background checks.
Well,
I mean, to start with background checks, that's something, 95% of people agree with. Let's do that. Maybe that would have prevented this insanity that happened yesterday.
It's what it comes down to. As far as I'm concerned, it's the fight for maybe. It's not going to fix all of it. But can't we do something that maybe stops one of these? As opposed to just sitting around and going, well, there's nothing you can do.
Well, and this notion that, oh, like you said, no one's talking about getting rid of the Second Amendment or restricting people's
rights. It's not going to happen.
It'll never happen in this country. And what troubles me is the NRA was started as a gun safety and reasonable organization. And they were co-opted by these gun manufacturers, and they hide behind principle to make profits for these people that are making these death machines, that are making military-style assault weapons that are easily purchased. You know, you're listening to the coverage last night, they're like, AK-47, oh, no, well, the AR-15 is the favorite. Everyone can buy an AR-15 in this country. Like, are you kidding me? Yeah.
You know, for better, whatever, they're good at what they do.
Absolutely.
The people are scared to death of them, and there's got to be pushback, or nothing's going to change. And you said, if they won't even, on a procedural vote, to let them speak, that's how scared both sides of the aisle.
I think it's going to take like a Nixon going to China moment. I think there's going to be have to be some really conservative, respected, you know, big supporter of the NRA break with them and say, you know what, enough's enough. That's what it's going to take.
Yeah, maybe President Trump can. It's 7:32, almost.
There won't be any Republicans left in the House or Senate if there is a President Trump, I guarantee you that.
All right, Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein are here. The last thing the city needs right now, in the middle of no budget, and the financial mess the city's in, is a protracted political scandal. Is there any way to avoid it, based on what we already know in the last week?
Well, I don't know what you want to define it as. It's a crisis. We're in the middle of a crisis. There's no question about it. You know, and it's a crisis that's bigger than the mayor. It's bigger than the police force. It's a huge problem in this country and in this certainly in this city and in an urban environment. And it is the last thing we need. But, you know, Mayor Emanuel, someone who famously coined the phrase, you know, sometimes out of tragedy, there's opportunity.
Right.
And I know sometimes you can interpret that flippantly. But, you know, through all this chaos and all this tragedy, maybe there is opportunity to repair some stuff and move forward in a positive way that's an improvement for the city. Like you said, I think pretty eloquently, you know, it's beyond McCarthy and Emanuel and Alvarez. It's not about them surviving. It shouldn't be a political story. It should be about our city. And, you know, we asked the police force, we asked the school system to do a lot more than they're really equipped to do.
Absolutely.
Societally. That is in no way forgiving, you know, first degree murder and outrageous behavior. But let's also not forget that there are a hell of a lot of good law enforcement officers out there. There were 7 standing on that site who were trying to contain an explosive situation. And you had one, you know, I don't know, sociopath or a guy who's a crazy person or a murderer out there. So I don't think you want to cast the light on all of them.
I could totally agree.
But Mayor, hopefully we can make something constructive out of this.
But Mayor Emanuel is asking us to believe an awful lot. And doesn't the city deserve answers from their chief executive about what happened? Because if I'm Mayor Emanuel, I want to stand up and just shout, none of what these people, including Cochran, are saying about me is true. Here's what really happened, and I'm going to prove this is what happened.
Well, look at the context here. In 1997, the police superintendent left under similar circumstances on the remember the drugs and the bribery of the police officers. We formed a blue ribbon panel. Mm-hmm. Same thing happened in 2007 with Superintendent Klein. We formed a blue ribbon panel. If you look at the context of the press conference that the mayor gave the other day, he didn't evoke that kind of confidence because now we're coming off the Barber Bird Bennett mess, a CTU strike a couple years ago, a guy that does not work the media at all. It's more my way or the highway.
Right.
So when he does this, there's not any sympathy or built-up reservoir of goodwill when he did the press conference, because the response to what he had proposed, everyone's just shaking their head. Bring in a guy from Massachusetts, and Deval Patrick's a good man, but he's not from here, and appointing a blue ribbon committee to deal with problems like Eric has just pointed out, very institutional problems have been going on for a long, long time. But you know what I think equally to me disturbing, and I wish politicians would just do their jobs, Lisa Madigan calling for a federal investigation when there's already a federal investigation, when she's the chief law enforcement officer of this state and has been there for like 4 terms now. And the only thing she did in regard to this shooting was the day before the video was released, she filed or put out a release saying, yeah, I think this should be released. And after the video was released, she called for the federal government to come in and do a comprehensive investigation of the Chicago Police Department. So they can operate under some kind of consent decree. Where the heck has she been?
Yeah, why now?
Why now? She has grand jury power. She could have investigated this. And equally, to me, offensive is Tony Preckwinkle's editorial today and Chuy Garcia in the Chicago Tribune. And you brought it up yesterday in the interview.
Right.
Her candidate, I'm not sure if this is accurate or not, but who makes the appointment? if Anita Alvarez resigns.
I don't know.
Is it the county board president?
County board president. And, yeah. she appoints a public defender. Let's not forget that. So we want to talk about,
so when
about
I bring
control
up,
over criminal justice. Well, system.
And when I bring up a conflict of interest, she yells at me.
Yeah, that's where people are cynical and don't believe maybe the mayor. Maybe he wasn't. I take him at face value that he's trying to propose things that are going to work. There's just a credibility gap when we, for years, see the same nonsense go on with no real solutions.
Yeah, why would the people of this city believe that anybody is on their side? Back with Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady. We're talking politics here. In the interest of time, we've got two other big things we need to hit, one of which is this ongoing budget crisis. Rick Pearson addressed it earlier. Pat, what was the point of the sit-down around the kids' table?
I think the point was to get people in a room, because they did have a meeting after the cameras were turned off. And I think there is some progress being made. They did get some stuff done yesterday, as Rick said, with lottery and some of the money that the cities needed. And there is more communication going on down there. I was down there yesterday than the public probably knows. But it is not a good situation. And I think one of the trip dates that we were looking for was the filing dates for the primaries to see how many Democrats were actually going to have opposition. And the political calculation being, is there any threat to the speaker's role as speaker, or the Democrats might lose the majority, which they won't. But I thought that might be a point that would make a difference, and we'll see. But if not, we're going into January, and it could be a long time that we're going without a budget.
If it gets into January, Eric, does that mean we're looking at springtime?
I, if you're into January, I don't know how you resolve anything before the primary, which is in March, and then you're going to be looking at the general election. I mean,
It's not hard to understand the apathy of the public over this stuff when there's such a steaming pile of nonsense that goes on in Washington and in Springfield, and they go, well, how am I going to fix it? Right. I mean, I understand why people feel that way.
Right. The thing of it is, there is a resiliency to the American public, and when you sit with them and in focus groups or see them respond to surveys, they're depressed and they're frustrated, but there's still a hopefulness that it can change. And, you know, as long as we have that, there's a spark of hope. We just can't give that up. But,
you know, it's funny you say that. I was getting petitions at the train station on Tuesday out in the western suburbs, and I had more people that didn't really like the candidate I was getting petitions for, but said, hey, it's part of the Democrat process. It's good. We should all be involved. So there's still a lot of optimism, but certainly a lot of reason for people to be pessimistic.
Hope and anger. I mean, how odd is that? We need both.
We do.
Does that fit on a bumper sticker?
Yeah. No, hope and change was different. Hope and anger. Hey, you know, somebody should roll with that. The next presidential debate on the Republican side is about a week away, and it'll be on CNN. There's an op-ed from the New York Times yesterday, which amused me. It's called Anyone But Cruz. And in this, they cite how the Washington collective is just repulsed by Ted Cruz.
I think I was quoted in that article.
The force is strong with this one.
Here's a Bush 2000 alumnus who sums it up best. Says, why do people take such an instant dislike to Ted Cruz? It saves time. So here's the thing. He is probably as dangerous as Donald Trump to the Republican Party. So
probably because there is, and I'm not, in my view, he would be a disaster. It'd be Barry Goldwater all over again. His biggest accomplishment in the Senate, his one term, has been shutting the government down. But he right now, with a lot of money, and if Trump falters, we'll see where those people go. But a lot of people think they will go to Cruz, and he could win Iowa, which I don't think Trump can. So if you're a Republican, which I am, and I want the party to grow and expand and be the majority party, Ted Cruz has got a good shot, and he's not the answer.
And what you guys have talked about the fallibility of polls and how at a time where the science should be better than ever, they're just wildly inaccurate. So, Eric, on the Democrat side, I see a poll that says Hillary's done with Bernie. She's leaving him in the dust. And then 2 days later, I see a poll that says Bernie could win. What do we believe?
Well, I think I've said this on the show before. A funny thing happens when the voters get involved, and we all get surprised. So I would take all these polls with a grain of salt. I think she certainly had a very good fall compared to the summer that she had. I don't think there's much question she'll be the Democratic nominee. I think there's some question as to what happens in Iowa and New Hampshire, but I don't think that will fundamentally change. I think however well Sanders does in Iowa and New Hampshire may slow down her getting the nomination, but it won't stop it. So I think that the only question that remains is how quickly does she get to the majority of delegates, I believe.
The farther we go down this road, it doesn't appear to me that Marco Rubio would be the greatest threat to Hillary from the Republican side. It would be if somehow, and I can't figure out how at this point, but Jeb Bush or John Kasich could be able to light a fire under their campaigns and get into the general election and obviously have the time to expose themselves as people who have led states and have had some successes.
Well, what about Christie? I mean, Christie's sort of the flavor of the week, got the endorsement of the New Hampshire paper and is making a move.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up because he is probably a front runner in New Hampshire and could well win it. Is he done with Bridgegate?
Not if he's becomes the leader of the Republican field or the nominee.
Here's what my good friend and sparring partner, Eric, will never say publicly. The person, the two people, but the one person that scares the Democrats more than anybody is Marco Rubio, because it's a Republican version of Obama, optimism, hope, change, new generation. Jeb Bush is not new generation. And John Kasich is a guy that's been very competent and very popular in his home state, but the guy that really scares him.
Oh, I agree with that. And look, you know, a lot of the people talk about the Democratic advantage has to do with demographics and a growing Latino population.
Yeah,
and there's a strong argument that Rubio could make a dent into that.
And so, his foreign policy is actually, for a guy that as young as he is pretty articulate on foreign policy, too, which is becoming a bigger and bigger issue.
Mm. You guys know more about this than I do.
And Eric's Eric is so honest. I can't believe he just admitted that. So I got
I think Rubio. Look, of that field of clowns, I mean, you know.
Oh, okay, now we're back to normal.
No, I mean, but I think what's fascinating to me is the closer we get to the vote, the less certain I am of who's the nominee's going to be. I mean, if you would have asked me 6 months ago or 3 months ago, I would have narrowed it to three. I think I have right now. I think you could say there's five or six of them that could end up as the nominee.
And the closer we get to the vote, we want to remind people there's still an opportunity for you to get sideways with Pat Brady at the Trump Tower. When will Trump be eliminated?
Yeah, time and date. You win a free happy hour at Trump Tower, $500 limit, which you said before lasts you about an hour. But you know what? We're going to get a celebrity guest. I don't know who it's going to be. But yeah.
If he's elected president, does the contest go into the reelect or not?
If he's elected president, I might be moving because we're going to have 435 Democrats and 100.
In live to Pat Brady in Montreal and Edmonton.
Yeah. Right.
They love me.
Unbelievable. Pat Brady, again, the company is?
Next Generation Strategies.
And Eric?
AL Media.
Thank you to both of you. Follow Eric at Adel64, A-D-E-L-64. And Google Pat Brady for all things Pat Brady, birthday parties, bar mitzvahs, elective surgeries. We'll come back, get your news next on 720 WGN.
Well, first of all, thanks for telling everybody what I'm going to do with my family. You had a private conversation with me, and now you decided to make that public. I really don't appreciate that. Number one, I really don't.
Express yourself.
The mayor is entitled to have a vacation with his family. Why is a trip to Cuba a secret? What am I missing there?
Well, plus people are going to find out anyway.
Yeah.
I really don't think Mayor
Emanuel
is going
to... Has there ever been a time where you want to know where Rahm Emanuel is more than now?
Right. Or if you try to get a hold of him and his staff says, well, I can't tell you.
I think
he's gone for 2 weeks, but we can't tell you where.
There may have been some projecting going on there. Mm-hmm. My old friend Natasha Karecki left the Sun-Times to go to Politico, and Politico's better for it, and we welcome her now. She was in that interview. That wasn't too awkward, was it, that little moment?
Yeah, I mean, upon reflection, I wish I had piped up, but I couldn't tell at first if he was just kidding.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
He's got to be just joking right now. And then I thought we would move on, and then it's like he smelled blood in the water or something and kept going, and it's ridiculous. I mean, come on. If anyone knows the rules of engagement, it's Rahm Emanuel.
Right.
So, I mean, it's what he does, right? I mean, he tries to get into your psyche, and I think he kind of successfully did that. But you know what? We were hitting him really hard for an hour, and hey, if you want to do that, fine. You know, he got his moment, we got ours.
Mike Allen, your colleague, and you sat down with Mayor Emanuel yesterday, made big news, not just because of his little outburst there, but because of several things he said. And I don't know if you caught Attorney General Madigan on a few minutes ago, but she told us she had no response from the mayor's office until he said she was misguided in her call for a Justice Department investigation. Do you have any sense? Did he give you any indication why he's not welcoming full light on this? Because he's certainly smart enough to realize the word cover-up gets deeper with the more he tries to not let information get out.
So this is fascinating because if you look back on the, and there's a link in today's Illinois Playbook that I put out to the video yesterday. And if you watch the part where I ask him about, and I said she, and he's like, who's she? And I said, oh, you know, Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan. And he made this kind of facial, like, oh, it's politics or something. I mean, he didn't say it, but it was his body language.
Right.
That was first of all. Today, just moments ago, I don't know if you saw this, the City Hall just put out a lengthy explanation on what he does really welcome, you know, more of a review. I think he's realized, they're realizing that this is so much bigger than they want it to be,
sure.
and it's growing every day, and they just put out a very detailed response saying, well, you know, here's the and they put the transcript of our questions from yesterday. This was a banner headline on the Chicago Tribune today. Obviously, it went viral on the internet, him saying that he didn't want to resign. And then, but I do think that his not fully embracing right away an inquiry into the pattern and practice of the Chicago Police Department, given all these issues, is a red flag, and that's why everyone's jumping on it. So he's trying to clarify that today.
Natasha, it seems like whenever we question Mayor Emanuel with anything, you know, because I've questioned him at the marathon just about how happy he was to be there, but there always seems to be a little bit of a wall, and obviously that was still up yesterday, and as Steve, you said too, to your point, a little bit of maybe pent-up frustration there as well.
Yeah.
Do you think he needs to kind of, at this point, start bringing that wall down a little bit? And maybe even, I don't even want to say make a joke of it, but...
Not getting bitchy. The first time somebody brings up anything
right,
to
because
him,
you know,
not jumping to that.
Right, because you know, especially at this point, it's going to come up, hey, you know what, are you going to step down now too? All these calls for resignation
right now.
So
bring the
wall down.
I mean, the thing is that I don't know what they're thinking. I think a much more, persuasive pushback right now would be, okay, well, these are the changes I'm making right away. And, you know, when I said that to him yesterday, you know, why are you hiding behind this blue ribbon panel? You're the mayor. Do something now. I mean, you closed 50 schools and, you know, cut $1 billion in spending CPS, no problem. You didn't need a panel to do that, right?
Right.
So do it now. Do something now. But doing this panel and slowly, I mean, I think it's a slap in the face to people. And his response to me was, oh, you want the immediacy of cable news? And my response was, no, I think, I'm reflecting the community interests here. And this isn't, to say that this is an immediacy is ridiculous, right?
I mean, completely.
This happened a year ago. to now say, okay, in March, give me a report, I think, people just want so much more than that. And as you said, lowering the barriers, you know, they should have come out saying, we are making the following changes right now.
Right now. Right now. There's no point in waiting. And yesterday, Natasha Korecki and Mike Allen, who sat down for Politico.com with Mayor Emanuel, and you can go to Politico.com, read it and hear it and see it. Did the question come up yesterday in regards to the slightly suspicious timing of the $5 million city approval of the payout to Laquan's family and the election, his reelection being within days of each other? Because, you know, here's the thing, Natasha. That's not an accusation. That's a fact.
By their own admission, by their own timeline given by City Hall, I mean, we know that the settlement was approved the second week of April, but But what City Hall just said this week was that that they had signed the papers on April 8th. Well, April 7th was the election. You know, so
anymore.
I mean,
so clumsy.
I mean, so that part is just, of course, people are going to ask questions. And then, all these things, he didn't watch the video. He never watched the video.
Yeah, come on.
That was my very first question to him yesterday. I do give the mayor credit for sitting down with us, though. I mean, this is a highly volatile time. You could see he was tired. He was very emotional very easily. I think that was a reflection of stress and tired. I mean, he just had a fire, his good friend and loyal ally, a day earlier. He's getting blasted left and right on TV. So I do give him credit for sitting down and answering the questions.
And Natasha, too, we brought this up yesterday. I mean, when they approved this lawsuit, of course, before the election, when they approved the lawsuit, that has to go before the city council, yes? And not one alderman at that point, black, white, Hispanic, not one said, you know what, I really want to review this. Let's look at this dash cam video. Let's watch this. Or maybe put it out there before they approve the settlement.
Right. No, they didn't. And if you want to talk about, you know, different failures, there's been a lot of discussion about, you know, the media, did the Chicago media do its job? Did Alderman call for the release of this when they should have? And, you know, the Black Caucus is calling for McCarthy's firing. On the one hand, on the other, you know, which one of them stood up asking for this? Tony Preckwinkle, wants Anita Alvarez gone. Did she stand up months ago asking for the release of this video?
No, and by the way, the media question's fair too, because we could have done it. We could have done it on this show. $5 million is a lot of money. And I don't remember anything outlandish in April going on where we missed it. So I admit that we missed it too. But here's the thing. Admitting the mistakes and saying we screwed up is more than you've heard out of the mayor's office. And I don't want any of this conspiracy stuff to be true. There's no upside to Mayor Emanuel being thrown out of office or a protracted political scandal now. But you and me and we all deserve the truth, and I don't feel like we're getting it.
Well, and that is the problem. I think you're right. I think that, you know, all these conspiracy theories are swirling. Certainly the optics of all of this looks bad. Like you said, the timeline of events. And some of the things that have come up about the mayor's office. Again, I think if he just came out more strongly and said, here's the changes, I recognize this, please, you know, Department of Justice, please come here, look at our department, we need it.
Right.
You know, kind of changing what we typically see from Rahm Emanuel, I think that would allay a lot of this.
And you know what's not going to fix it, Natasha? A sweater. Remember he put the sweater on for the commercials? It's not going to fix it.
It'd be a bulletproof.
Congratulations on the Politico move. I think it's great that you're working with Politico, and we will read you and see your work there as well on video. And nice job yesterday.
Thank you so much for having me.
At Natasha Korecki on social media, all over the place. How about the timing of that? Now, you probably knew this. I did not. But to have the election be on the 7th of April.
And it signed on the 8th.
And the approval for the payout be on the 8th.
Can you believe that? Would you feel... Would you feel differently if Rahm Emanuel came out and said, you know what, I didn't see the dash cam video, and that's my mistake. I should have looked at it.
Exactly.
Going forward,
well, you know what else
I'm
going to
make sure I look
you
at
it. You know what else I want to hear? And this may be the toughest thing for Mayor Emanuel to do, because it's certainly not part of his character that we know. To get up in front of it, to come here, to get on TV, to do it wherever he's going to be, between here and Havana, and say, of course I understand why people think this is odd.
Yeah.
Of course it looks bad. Of course I understand why the word conspiracies come up. But none of it is true, and I'm going to prove that it's not true. Instead of acting like we're the idiots, we're the people who, how could we dare distrust? How could we question his moves? This is his downfall. And this is what could take him down unless he comes to his senses about it.
One more thing, too. Natasha asking about Cuba. There's no way he could keep that under wraps, because having just been, you have to go through this intricate process. I had to submit my visa form 4 times. So it's not going to be a hidden, you know, let's go to the Dells for the weekend.
Ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Not going to have time to get to all the texters, but, you know, it's interesting. Several people have brought up the scandal of the Catholic Church with this scandal and the parallels with the police and the church, the idea being if there's an organization of empowerment or power that protects its own, it's never going to work out well for the organization or for those it's allegedly in business to serve. And it doesn't feel like that big of a stretch. So, but a lot of great texts and the reform that the Catholic Church has instituted or has tried to institute, is frankly years ahead of where, and I'm not Catholic, but is years ahead of where the police department is now. But for every good priest, obviously the vast majority of priests should be completely offended and angry that they had to be lumped in because of the Catholic Church sex scandal. It's a good time for me to plug the movie Spotlight.
Maybe.
Have you seen it?
No.
So good.
I really want to see it, though. So I'm going to maybe see it this weekend.
Spotlight is the story of the journalists who broke the story, broke it big out of the Boston archdiocese. It's that. Really, really good.
Michael Keaton in that.
Mark Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo.
Tremendous.